BlindBargains.com presents CSUN at 30, a look back at the world's premier technology conference through the years. Now, here's Joe Steinkamp.
Welcome, everyone, to Blind Bargains AT History Special. Note that we've been talking about history for a while on the other shows, and, you know, this is a great opportunity for you to hear about audio that we've done in the past, audio that has some interviews from people who are at the very first CSUN, and a few of these audios will even talk about what some people will think will happen in the very near future. Along with me on this particular podcast is the man who has been there for a lot more Blind Bargains audio than myself. Hello, Mr. JJ Metal.
Yes, Joe, thank you so much. This has been a special we've talked about for a little while, and I'm so glad to see it coming together. CSUN at 30, kind of exploring what it was like at the first CSUN, or one of the early conferences, what happened when things slowed down. So you're going to hear from people like James McCarthy, who now works for HIMSS, but has been in the industry for a long time, Larry Skukon from 8PH, and many, many more. Some of the greats in assistive technology, and also some of the podcasts that myself, that we've done over the years at CSUN. Now, we started coming at CSUN 25, so we don't have any audio from 1986, but we do have some audio from technology, at least more recently, and it's even interesting in the last 5 years how much things have changed. So definitely stay tuned for that. Also, a big shout out to HIMSS, who is sponsoring our CSUN 30 special coverage. HIMSS, your needs are our solution. So thank you so much for HIMSS picking up the sponsorship for this special.
A man who was with James McCarthy at that very first CSUN all those years ago is Mr. Mark Stenzel. Mark has been with such companies as Telesensory as well as his current company, Enhanced Vision. And I sat down with him to talk about what that show was like and also what's going on with some technology that's still to be released from Enhanced Vision. All right, everybody, we're back, and I'm talking with someone who I've known in this industry for a while, who probably could tell some horror stories about me, I'm sure, but he has lots of stories to tell about the industry in general, because he has been around the industry for a considerable amount of time, and that is not necessarily a negative thing, because when it comes to understanding this industry, I turn to Mark Stenzel to find out a lot about what's going on, what's been happening, and where things are going. Mark with Enhanced Vision. Mark, it is so good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity. I look forward to the interview.
Last year, we had talked about CSUN at 30, and you had said that you had attended all 30 of them. Wow, that is a feat that not many people in the exhibit hall could have made a claim to. Can you give me an idea of what it was like at the very first show and how big it was?
I do recall the first CSUN, which I believe was in 1985 or 86. And I had just joined Telesensory, and I had moved up to Northern California from Santa Monica, where I was living, and I returned to the campus of CSUN in Northridge to attend the first conference. And it was actually on campus in the Student Union. And there were about 10 or 12 vendors, and I believe we were actually outside in the sunshine. And I thought, well, this is kind of a cool idea. I had no idea 30 years from now I'd still be doing it, and that it would morph into the international event that it's become. So it's become quite a show. I think it's a must-attend show for anybody who is interested in being in assistive technology.
Now, we've gone from the age of round screens of video magnifiers and one cells on a device to wireless video magnifiers and wireless braille displays. Is there any particular technology, whether it was one that you saw at Telesensory or elsewhere, was there one that kind of stands out in your mind that you saw at a show for the first time and kind of sort of go, wow, that really is advancing the technology that low vision and blind people and others use?
Well, I think I would say probably 15 years ago, when I saw the first truly portable electronic video magnifier. I think it was a device that was coming out of England at the time. And up to that time, as I think most of your listeners know, virtually all video magnifiers were rather large and bulky and heavy and fairly expensive. And it wasn't the type of thing that you could easily carry around. And the portable area became really almost an overnight phenomenon. We went from, you know, one manufacturer to probably 25 or 30 on a worldwide basis that are making all manner of portable devices. And I'm not even counting things like iPhones and iPads, which many visually impaired and blind people use as well. So I would say that that's probably the most interesting development, along with wireless technology, which I think also furthers the ability of people to carry devices with them. And the other thing certainly that has made a big difference in the area I specialize in, which is video magnifiers, is flat screen technology. So that devices are now, I think, a little bit smaller, sleeker, perhaps a little more portable, but still desktop. And I think prices have, if anything, they've actually come down over the years. They haven't gone up, which is sort of remarkable.
I've used the Apollo Laser series, which had the audacity to write portable on the side of it, and that was 35 pounds. Of course, portable being that you would carry it on a small red wagon, and then move to the Miva and the Miva 2. And then, of course, the Pico was one of my first handheld devices that I ever used. But now things have moved down, like you were saying, into real small packages, such as what happens when you look at, say, a Mini Pebble or an Amigo HD.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. And you're actually bringing back some very good memories of some of the early products that I was involved in and you experienced as a user. We did, at CSUN, introduce a new version of the Amigo. Many of the listeners may remember the Amigo, which was introduced 8 or 9 years ago by Enhanced Vision. And the design hadn't changed very much. And we've been working on a new design, actually, for quite some time. And the new Amigo, we're pretty proud of. It is a much, I think, smaller, sleeker device, but it features a 7-inch screen, even though it weighs less than the original Amigo. And it also incorporates HD technology, a wide range of magnification, up to 25 times. It can be used not only for near tasks, like reading, which is its primary purpose, but also as a distance capability and actually produces a very nice picture at a distance of, say, 2 to 6 feet. You just fold the device up, look at what you wish, and you can either autofocus or manual focus depending on the target, and it actually produces a very nice picture. People were very impressed, and we had a lot of people coming over to have a look at it at CSUN.
The original Amigo I remember very well because it was the widescreen and it allowed for more line reading at a time and certainly had those real easy-to-use wheels on the side for changing color filtering and size, and removable battery. That was really huge in the original Amigo. Did any of those features come along to the Amigo HD?
Actually, it's a good question, Joe. The only thing that we saved from the original Amigo was the name. Otherwise, it's a completely new design. The controls are now, I think, actually more easily accessible. Right on the front, on the right, either to the right or left of the screen, so you don't have to reach around to the side, even though that worked very well, but we moved them to the front. And I think the reaction to that's been very, very positive. We've also now gone to an integrated battery that'll give you 4 to 5 hours on a full charge. It's not user replaceable, much like an iPhone. If you plug it in, you know, every night, charge it up, you should be good to go, you know, for the whole day, because typically people don't use a portable device for 4 or 5 hours in a row. They might use it 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And so a 4 to 5 hour battery life, we think for most people, will get them through the bulk of the day. You can also plug it in and use it while it's plugged in. So as long as you have access to an outlet, you should be okay. The Amigo also has storage capability and via USB connection. You can actually download what you've stored to your laptop if you choose to do that, or just keep the storage resident on the Amigo and bring it up anytime you want to review it.
The original Amigo had this wonderful tilt feature, and I remember being so amazing at the time. It was very ahead of its time compared to some of its other brethren, kind of the same way the DaVinci is as well. You and I have talked about DaVinci once or twice, and it seemed to keep evolving over time. How's DaVinci doing, and what's new for it?
Well, the DaVinci continues to be one of our most popular products because, as I think you know, it features a 3-in-1 camera for reading, distance, and what we call self-viewing, 24-inch monitor. It hasn't been upgraded in terms of the physical characteristics, although we're looking at an important upgrade coming in the summertime. We hope to be ready with an upgrade. And can't talk about it right now, but I will come June or July. But we have updated the software. As you know, it has OCR capability, and it does a partial page OCR, which some people like. And that software has been made easier to use and provide better qualities in terms of accuracy of the OCR and the text-to-speech. Prices remain the same. I want to go back to Amigo for just a minute. One of the things I didn't mention is that the original Amigo sold for $16.95, which at the time was, I think, a fair price, but prices have generally come down in that category. The new Amigo, which we call Amigo HD, is $12.95. So we brought the price down pretty significantly. I think it makes it more accessible to more people, we would hope.
Now, they also come with wonderful cases. For full disclosure, I actually have an Acrobat HD and its rolling case, and I'm very happy with that. Mm-hmm. And I've always been pleased with the type of casing that comes with Enhanced Vision products. Both of those do come with a case, out of curiosity?
The Amigo includes a carrying case, which is quite nice. It has a strap so you can put it over your shoulder. That's included in the price. The DaVinci does not include a case, but you can actually, for an extra charge, you can purchase a Acrobat case, which works reasonably well to carry it around. The DaVinci, because of its 24-inch screen, while it doesn't take up a lot of desk space, is rather large. I think most people put it in place and leave it there, but you can get a case for it if you do wish to move it.
Oh, how many times could I tell you about dragging that 35-pound Apollo? Sometimes you find a way to make things happen, but it's a really nice rolling case. I have the Acrobat case, and I like it very much.
Right.
One of the spaces that Enhanced Vision kind of pioneered was the head-mounted camera with Jordy. Jordy, I remember putting it on my head for the first time, and I actually have a picture of Jordy wearing the Jordy, being the man from Star Trek, and it's really cool to be able to do that. But I remember also working in the Division for Blind Services and allowing others to see their spouses or their friends or the clock or even things across the room with the Jordy for the first time and just being amazed. And it sounds like now that it's time for an update to the Jordy and that things are going to be changing in that area and you guys are kind of retaking that space possibly.
Well, yes, I think you're right about that, and the Jordy really advanced the state of the art when it was first introduced, and we manufactured and distributed it successfully for many, many years. What happened was that a critical component became unavailable to us, and without that component, we couldn't continue production, so we needed to stop. The Jordy has been undergoing redevelopment and redesign. I can tell you what some of our goals are, which we are now getting close to achieving. That's to make it smaller, lighter weight, make it more comfortable on the head, because that was one of the things that some people couldn't adjust to. Anything head-mounted has to be extremely comfortable. And the original Jordy worked well, but left something to be desired in terms of comfort. So we're working real hard to have a headset that's very comfortable so people can wear it and use it for longer periods of time. We also hope to improve the image quality, the contrast, and the ability to use it for both distance as well as near. Those are part of the goals that we're searching for. We also hope to perhaps reduce the price a little bit to bring that down to make it more accessible to people who want to purchase it. I can't give you a timetable on that. I wish I could, but I would just ask that you stay tuned on that particular product.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Well, seeing how the original prototype was like something that kind of enveloped your head to something that became at the time very easy to wear, but like you said, over time, as in a long duration of time, because you could actually swap out batteries, you could wear the device for several hours. I know people in the oil field was doing that. I know people in scientific positions were using that to read testing equipment and the like. I've seen a lot of people using the Jordy for those very reasons, but I can see why a refinement and a time for a revision was really a good thing, and I'm excited to hear about that, and hopefully we'll hear more about that soon.
On the issue of Jordy, head-mounted technology in general has actually become more mainstream, not so much in the assistive technology area, but more the military applications and industrial applications. So while it hasn't made its way into assistive technology, we think we're going to be able to use some of those things that are out there in other industries and incorporate those into what we hope will be the new Jordy.
You know, that kind of takes me back into the CSUN conversation a little, because with the use of body cameras and Google Glass and other things, it is becoming more acceptable to wear what we would have seen as assistive technology being unique back in the day. I mean, certainly 10 years ago, wearing a Geordie would have maybe gotten you a little bit of looks. But nowadays, with as many wearables that are coming out, it seems to be something that people would be more familiar with. Can you think of other technologies that you thought at the time were very strange? I mean, I could think of Gil Lutz wearing a backpack with a laptop computer and six CD-ROMs as was one of the first times I ever encountered a GPS system. Is there anything that strikes you from the days of CSUN that seems strange and odd at the time, but now would seem kind of normalplace?
Well, yeah, I'd have to give that some thought. I do think that over time there are products that have been seen in the exhibit hall which do seem rather strange, whether it's in the low vision or blindness area or learning disabilities and so forth. And as things become more mainstream and accepted, and as we now have a generation that has grown up with electronics, you know, when I was growing up, we had one phone in the house and that was attached to the wall. Now there's so many different pieces of electronics, people don't think twice about that. So I think we're going to see more and more of that. And your comment about wearable technology, I think that will eventually find its way into the low vision area as well, even though the Geordie sort of pioneered that. We hope to have the next generation soon.
Mark, there's lots of other products that are available with enhanced vision. Is there any that you would like to touch on?
Well, sticking with the portable area, the Pebble HD, which was redesigned about a year ago, we've incorporated HD technology into all our products. So Pebble now has that. This is really an excellent picture. All of our other desktop CCTVs, Merlin may be a name that people are familiar with, Acrobat, which is somewhat like the DaVinci but without the OCR capability, has incorporated all HD cameras using actually Sony technology, a Sony camera. And so we're very proud of the picture quality that we can now present to the public. And what I really like about it is that we have not had a need to raise the price. So we've incorporated the latest HD cameras and kept the prices the same. And I'm happy when we're able to do that, because I know cost of these products still is an issue for some people who have to pay out of pocket.
And where can people learn about more of this technology and maybe even get a chance to maybe run into a dealer or get a chance to see some of this technology themselves?
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. As I think you're aware, but for your listeners' benefit, the demonstration of our products is available in their home or office just on request, pretty much anywhere in the United States and many parts of the world. They can call our phone number, which is 800-440-9476. I'll repeat that, 800-440-9476. Or they can go to our website, which is www.enhancedvision.com.
Mark, it is always a pleasure to catch up with you and learn what's going on over at Enhanced Vision. And I appreciate you taking some time out to talk about the 30 years of technology that you've seen. I'd love to get into some more of that at some point and talk about times past if you're willing, because it's always good to hear about these things, because I believe very strongly in that we have to know where we came from in order to know where we're going.
Yes, I agree. It's my pleasure, and happy to have a more extended conversation whenever you wish.
Thank you so much, Mark. We're now talking with James McCarthy, who is president of HIMSS Inc. here in Texas. And, you know, James, you and I go way back and have all sorts of stories that we could talk about. But let's begin with something that you share with very few people that are still in our industry. You were at the very first CSUN.
Well, that's right, Joe. It doesn't seem that long ago. Actually, I joined Visual Tech in 1982. I was actually a user of a Visual Tech Mini Viewer desktop video magnifier, 12-inch model since 1974. And lo and behold, when I got out of graduate school, I worked for the company. And it was based in Santa Monica, California at the time. And of course, CSUN is based in Northridge, California, in the San Fernando Valley. I'm guessing, but perhaps about 20 plus miles from Santa Monica, almost straight due north. I'm not exactly sure the year. I'm going to guess it was probably 1985. The very first CSUN was held on the Cal State University Northridge campus in the Student Union. And I remember students just walking through the exhibit area, having nothing to do with the conference. It's just that we kind of took possession of their Student Union. And Dr. Harry Murphy, of course, was the founder and organizer, you know, of the CSUN conference. But I have a very visual memory of that first conference, actually using the tables of the Student Union, the chairs of the Student Union. And I think it was approximately 3 years later when it first moved off campus to one of the host hotels. And I've been to probably 27 or 28 of the 30 CSUNs over the years. And, yep, things really changed. Of course, I was with Visual Tech, which, you know, was called VTech, I think. By the time we attended the first conference, we made a name change when the company expanded a little bit into talking devices and Braille devices. And we would actually carry this big, huge CRT 19-inch, 69-pound monitors there for display. So things are a whole lot easier today when you have LCD screen, and the camera units are also a lot lighter. So that's been something that made a lot of progress for the low vision products field. I mean, talking about portability, in the early 2000s, around 2004, we also made a lot of progress by coming out with, of course, all-in-one portable video magnifiers. And I was associated with the first one, which was actually called Quick Look. Distributed in the United States through actually my company at the time called Freedom Vision. And that kind of brings me into something involving HIMSS. HIMSS was actually the first company to have a portable video magnifier. It was called the SenseView, and it was the first one that had multiple magnification levels. I think it came out in 2006, and prior to that, all of the video magnifiers on the market, of which there were probably only four or five, they all had just a single magnification. So HIMSS was a technology leader in that respect, coming out with the first portable video magnifier with it actually had nine magnification levels.
And a distance camera on the Duo, which was also kind of a trendsetter because everybody was doing things that were close up, literally trying to make an electronic handheld magnificator kind of thing, you know, where you just hold up a magnifying glass. The Duo, which came out shortly after the original SenseView, and for full disclosure, I have a SenseView Lite, so I'm familiar with the HIMSS line pretty much, but the SenseView Duo allowed you to be able to see up close and then far away, and then also brought something else to the table. They let you store images on a portable device.
That's right. And that was actually HIMSS' first products in the low vision field. But first, the SenseView came out, and a year later, the SenseView Duo came out, which they called a Duo because it had two cameras. One was the close-up camera for reading and writing. It had a flippable camera head. It was the second product to have a flippable camera head for writing, which actually allowed you to control the device a lot better, control the monitor part of it when you were writing. But it had a second camera that was dedicated to distance focus, and technically, it was the first portable video magnifier with distance focusing. And like you say, Joe, it also was the first one that had actual memory. So it could save, I think at that time, the very first model could save 20 images. And of course, nowadays, there's some units that can save 100 or even 1,000 images, and there's a port you can download it to your computer. And as far as my use, when the Quick Look first came out, it was the best thing for me in a decade. My vision is 20 over 400. And I remember going to the grocery store with it, coming home and showing my wife what I bought. And she actually patted me on the head and said, "You did well, honey. You've never been able to find things like this in the grocery store before on your own." so that was a really rewarding experience for me as a low vision user. Well, of course, HIMSS is also a company involved in refreshable Braille display market, with our BrailleSense U2 series of note takers, our Braille Edge Braille displays. And that field, actually, the technology is quite sophisticated with these piezoelectric cells. And so HIMSS has become one of the leaders. A lot of people don't know that HIMSS actually was founded in 1999 Although their first products were sold in the United States in 2005, and the Sense line of products, the BrailleSense and the VoiceSense, the SenseView and the BookSense, were our first products. Our new products, not all of them are following the Sense brand name. Only our BrailleSense U2 note takers are following the Sense brand name these days. But the Braille market also came quite a ways. I recall the VersaBraille from Telesensory was really the first refreshable Braille note taker. And that was a big box back in the day. I actually worked at Telesensory in December of 88, Telesensory acquired VTEC. And I became an employee of Telesensory through 1994 and got involved a little with the Braille products when I was the director of sales at Telesensory. And I actually missed that field, and that's one of the attractions when I came back with HIMSS in 2010 was that I could work not only in the low vision field, but also in the Braille and the blindness field again. So the Braille field also has seen quite a change in technology over the years. CSUN actually has remained one of the conferences where the blind and visually impaired participate very strongly. Conference like Closing the Gap, we started out at that conference for about 15 years with the blindness and low vision companies being strong, but we sort of faded and other companies and learning disabilities, speech and language pathology started to dominate there. And that's when the ATIA conference was started. No fault of Closing the Gap. I don't mean to imply that. But the Braille products have come a long ways, especially getting smaller. And we have in our BrailleSense U2 line, of course, our U2 and U2 QWERTY 32 cell models. We also have an 18 cell U2 mini. And we've put that in its smaller case, so it's half the size of our U2 Braille model, 32-cell model, and half the weight. So instead of 2 pounds, it's 1 pound. And that's a very popular, we call it the purse model, and very popular, especially among women blind Braille users. But most recently, we came out with our Smart Beetle, which is a 14-cell. We call it a personal Braille display. It's designed primarily for use with smartphones and tablets. It'll be shipping in about 6 to 8 weeks. And we call it Smart Beetle because the beetle has 6 legs. And this product has the capability of connecting to 6 devices simultaneously. So you don't need to disconnect from one device and repair with another device. You just go to the device manager and select which device you want to be connected with. So that's going to be a popular product. And the price point, having only 14 cells, being a personal unit, is only at $12.95. Plus, you can buy an optional case, or you can buy it bundled up front for $13.45 with its case. And that was one of the popular products at our booth at CSUN this year. Also, a lot of technologies actually have been merging together and integrating together. And one of our latest products at CSUN was the Blaze series, which now has 2 models, the Blaze EZ and the Blaze ET. And both of those models are not only a digital book player for music, for books, for internet radio, but we are the first company that have integrated an OCR camera into the Blaze product. So it is now a multifunction device. You can actually use it as a digital book and music player. You can also use it to scan a document. It's a portable scanner with TTS, text-to-speech, so it'll read a document out loud to you wherever you go. And the Blaze EZ, which is $695, and the Blaze ET at $795, combined technology actually has brought affordability into a multifunction device. So that's something that I've seen over the years. A lot of the devices have become multifunctional. A lot more features, a lot more power built into various devices for the blind and visually impaired.
Absolutely. The BookSense and the Blaze units, the XT specifically on the BookSense line, had an FM radio in it. And of course, the Blaze units have the ability to do internet radio and podcasts. But there are all sorts of crazy products you must have seen over the years. So I have to ask you this question, because I've asked this of a lot of our guests on this special. Do you remember any crazy technology or one of those that will never fly, but actually it kind of did moments where you saw technology and then you were surprised by it?
Well, let's see. Gosh, this really starts to test my memory. You know, I do know that one of the more recent products that people said wouldn't fly before we even began development was our latest product, the EBOT, short for Education Robot, because the product is reading, writing, and distance. One of our design hypotheses was, could we make that a device, reading, writing, and distance video magnifier camera, compatible with an iPad and Android tablet, because these tablets do not have a video input. So you cannot just connect a video cable from the camera to the iPad or Android tablet. So we would have to do it with some higher technology, and we were able to do it using Wi-Fi. So we have a dedicated Wi-Fi built in with the EBOT camera and electronics that communicates wirelessly via an app to display the camera's image on an iPad or Android tablet. But what people said couldn't be done was, or why would we do it, was low vision people have low vision. They need magnification. They need a big monitor. And that fell into the fallacy of, because you have low vision, you need everything big. Well, you don't necessarily need the monitor big. You need the print size big. So people really questioned hard, why would we want to make a video magnifier device that works on a 9.7-inch iPad screen when low-vision people need big monitors? Because there's been a trend of monitors, especially ever since the changeover from CRT screens to the LCD screens, flat screens, that were lighter and thinner. So the monitors became bigger. They were now using 22 and 24-inch monitors as a standard for desktop video magnifiers. So people really questioned hard why we would design a product to work with a 9.7-inch, and could visually impaired people use it? And of course they can. A lot of visually impaired people are using iPads, and not only with VoiceOver, many of them use the Zoom function in the iPad. So of course they could. And so far the EBOT, of course, is a very popular product because people like just about anything that works with an iPad or an Android tablet these days.
Well, you know, it's funny because you talk about bigger monitors and the like, and one of my stories is, and I don't even think the company existed. I keep attributing it, talk about the fuzzy memory. It was either VTI or it was Clarity, but someone had gone to Best Buy or the equivalent back then, which was probably McDuff's, and gotten a 40-inch Mitsubishi or Toshiba television. And by television, I mean the glass tube 240-pound dead weight television, and connected something like the Max to it or something to that effect, because they wanted to show that you could have big monitors. And of course, that, you know, we could ship this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine what that would cost. But they were talking about the price point on this product. And for some people, of course, that era still worked for them, for the size that it was and what was available, and before we had LCDs. I'm walking around the show floor and there are 42, 52-inch monitors on LCDs now that people are hooking up video magnifiers to, either through HDMI or things like that, or something as small as an iPad, like with the EBOT. And it's weird to think about all the delivery methods we have now in the case of video magnification.
Well, you know, one of the effects that I've really seen, and sometimes the people today don't really realize how important it's been, not only has technology changed, and so you've gotten more value for your money, but the real value of the dollar, back in 1982, video magnifiers actually cost, in 1982 dollars, the same as they cost today. So given inflation, you get a better product today with video magnifiers, a lot more options. Because back in 82, your only option was a big, heavy desktop. Today, you have a lot more options, whether it's portability and screen size and inline cameras or side-by-side camera and monitor setups. You have a lot more options to accommodate your vision. And the actual dollars are the same, but in terms of inflation, they're one quarter what the price was back in the 1980s, one third or even a quarter. So that's something to really appreciate. I sometimes think people in 1982 said, gee, the product's expensive. And people here in 2015 are saying, gee, the product's expensive. And I kind of give them a history lesson. And I sometimes have had pictures with me of my original unit, which had a wood grain casing to it. And I showed it to them and said, now that's old, isn't it? They said, yeah, it is. And I said, well, back in 1970s, it cost the same amount of dollars as today's unit, but you can see how much prettier today's unit is. It uses a flat screen, and the image is so much better. It's autofocus, and it's HD image resolution. So that's something that has really changed over the years. The technology's gotten so much better. And even though this industry still is not high-volume manufacturing, we still have very personal relations with our dealers, and dealers do with customers. This is just not, a mainstream field, really. But the prices have actually come down. I mean, you think about it in terms of inflation.
Oh, when we go to Braille displays, it's a whole nother story. The Versa Braille, like you were saying, the original one sells with the crazy storage drives to people putting Braille displays in mice. I remember there was one year Freedom Scientific actually had a video game kind of parlor set up. And, you know, they were doing racing games with a mouse and Braille display to things like the Smart Beetle, which, you know, fit in a pocket and can connect to all these different devices like an iPhone. It has come where you have always been using mainstream technology to connect to AT. I think people forget that those are regular camera image sensors. Those are they are made by people like Sony or what have you. And then you have monitor technology that's made by people who are LG or Samsung. We've always been using mainstream technology in corporation with AT technology, but it is that relationship, that understanding of what the user wants and who the user is, that kind of sets it apart from relying completely on a mainstream kind of alternative.
Well, that's a good point that you bring up, because I remember the VersaBraille, it actually had a serial port. And people had a lot of technical support problems and questions, even getting their VersaBraille to interface with a secondary device. And nowadays, we have much simpler interfaces. You can Bluetooth pair quite easily. You can just connect a USB cable. And so the communication options are so much easier today and even faster. Like I say, the Smart Beetle, you can connect simultaneously to 6 devices. Now, most people probably won't connect to 6 devices, but nowadays the number of what we call power users is actually increasing. So someone may, in fact, want to pair up to their iPhone and to a tablet and to their MacBook all at the same time and just go between different devices, but leave them live and hooked up at all times. That's something that just wasn't possible.
Especially students.
15 or 20 years ago.
Right.
Maybe even 5 years ago.
Well, James, we appreciate your time. We actually got you while you're at a conference, so we do thank you for taking some time out to sit with us and talk about all the crazy technology that's come up over the years, and also for helping sponsor this particular special at this look back at 30 years of CSUN. And thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much to all of you, Joe, and for working with us and giving us an opportunity to share our technology with people who we can help. I've been in this field now for 33 years. It just feels too good for me, and I've just never been able to pull myself away from this field. I love how this technology has helped people, and I live it myself and how it's helped me. So if HIMSS or if any of our assistive technology companies in our industry have products that can help any of the listeners out there, it's very important to try to get the technology that can help you. The quality of life you can experience with it is hard to imagine until you actually have the technology in your hands.
Two different perspectives, but one show that both men attended, both James and Mark, in that last block there. It is really wild to think about how things went from being just kind of, hey, let's get a bunch of technology together, to being one of the largest places you can see all this technology at one stop. And I don't mean just blindness. We're talking about individuals who are deaf, individuals who have cognitive issues, or those who have physical impairments. They too can see this technology and see technology of their very own. And it has become one of the best places to network now with big companies like Google as well.
You know, there's a lot of different things that have happened at CSUN over the years. And I've had the privilege of talking to many of the movers and shakers in assistive technology for at least all of the San Diego shows back to 2010. So let's take a listen to a few of the interviews that I've done in the past at CSUN.
We're here with Jeremy Sudell, co-founder and developer for Looktel. Looktel made a lot of waves recently with the introduction of a new iPhone app for currency recognition. Welcome to Blind Bargains.
Hi.
So a lot of people might be familiar with, but in case they aren't, why don't you give us a little background on your company and then what the app actually does.
So we've been working with image recognition to help facilitate recognition of objects for the visually impaired.
Okay.
And what we do is process the video that's incoming from your device or right on the device, like the iPhone, and look for items that are in our database. So this current app that we've just released is a money reader. So we have a database of the U.S. currency. And as soon as you point your bill next to the phone into the camera, it will start speaking its denomination. So this is the initial app. Some of the things that we'll be developing in the future are expanding the app to recognize things around your house, like in the pantry, spices, beers, various frozen goods, canned goods.
So that would be using images or using barcodes?
Using images. So you don't need any special tags or you don't need to look for the barcode. You just look at the natural labeling of the product, and that's what's in the database. So you just point at it, and as soon as it comes in within view of the camera, it's recognized. So you don't need to take any photos. It's just real time.
Okay.
It's kind of like a constant scanner.
Can we hear all the current app sounds? Or?
Sure. So the current... Yep. It's a little bit noisy in here.
It'll pick it up.
All right. So.
$1.
That's
so
quick.
$1. So here's now...
$10. $10. $10.
And it really doesn't matter which direction as long as it's somewhere near, near the camera. Or...
Yeah, just as long as we usually keep it like 2 to 6 inches away. But any orientation, upside down, black and white, it could be, you don't even need to see the whole bill. Just a fragment of it is enough.
What if it sees more than one at a time?
So it'll announce both of them, whichever one is seeing more of.
Got you. So it'd be better to have one, not have a stack to kind of separate them a little bit at least. So you
Can... Or you just kind of flip. If you have them all folded in half, you kind of open them up one at a time.
Okay. So it currently does all denominations of U.S. Currency?
Correct.
So any plans to add euros or Canadian or other currencies along with that? Or?
Yeah, we're planning on adding all the the major currencies.
We're here with Gordon Hudek, the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Ambitech. And I am wearing, at this point, a brand new product. I'll let you describe it, I guess. It's they're kind of glasses. And
it's an ultrasonic mobility aid, and rather than being attached to a cane or anything else, it's in the shape of a pair of eyeglasses.
Okay.
And that is, in fact, the product name, the small letter I, and then the word glasses. It uses ultrasonics. It sends out a beam that reflects back from objects and sets off a vibrating motor inside the frame of the glasses.
Okay. All right, so I'm wearing it, so... How do I turn this on?
Okay, there's a button on the right temple.
Yep.
And you depress it and hold it until you hear an audible beep.
I hear four beeps.
Four beeps means the battery's fully charged.
Well, that's good.
Three would be three quarters charged. Two would be half charged. When it gets down to a minimum charge, there'll be 10 consecutive beeps that tell you to recharge the batteries.
Okay. So I'm looking at you right now, and it's vibrating.
Yes. I'm standing pretty much at the minimum range. So if I move back... Those vibrations are going to get spaced further apart.
Oh, I see. It's going on, off, and now it's gone.
So as I get closer to you...
And it's going to... Okay, how far are you right now? It started vibrating.
I'm about 2 feet away.
Okay. Well, it vibrated before that, I think.
Yeah, the range is about 2 feet to 10 feet.
Okay. So as I look around, here in front of me, if I look to the left, there's an opening. Now... As I was talking to the other people at the booth, this is not a replacement for the cane, correct?
No, absolutely not. It's used in conjunction with the cane.
Because it's not going to see the stuff that's on the ground.
No, it's designed to protect your upper body from overhanging tree branches or those awnings that people tend to put out that are a little too low, or overhead signage, that type of thing.
So the range is up to about 10 feet. How fast does it react for someone like me who's definitely a faster walker?
Well, it reacts at the speed of sound, basically. It's using ultrasonic rays, so it sends them out at the speed of sound, and they're reflected back at the speed of sound.
Okay. The vibration, there's a little lever or knob.
There's a little wheel that it increases or decreases the intensity of the vibration.
Okay.
The batteries are lithium ion, so they last for 10 hours of continuous vibration. Okay. There's no memory with the batteries, so you can plug it in and charge it as often as you want. We would recommend that you charge them overnight. It's about a 2.5 hour from a dead battery back to a fully charged battery.
Mm-hmm.
The arm pieces are adjustable in length, so you can pull them out to fit various individuals.
It seems like it might take a little bit. I guess it's like learning how to use a cane, right? It might take a little bit of a learning curve, just getting used to how to react to the vibrations.
And I hate to say it, but it's a bit of an age thing, you know. We had some 12-year-olds here,
mm-hmm.
and they caught on to the whole thing in probably under a minute.
Right.
And yet, yes, the older you get, I'm a little older than you are, Jason, probably 20 years, and I've worn them. And it does take some getting used to, like anything else.
Sure. We are here with Fabrice Mercier. He is the International Sales Manager for EO Guidage, and he is here to demonstrate a new type of pedestrian signal. So, Fabrice, welcome to Blind Bargains.
Thank you.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what you are showing us here.
So here we are showing a system which can be integrated into visual displays of traffic light, of pedestrian traffic light displays,
mm-hmm.
Which is composed by an electronic card and a loudspeaker. And this system is just copying what is displayed on the visual display to give the information for blind people of the status of the traffic light.
Okay.
And this system is working on demand. You can activate the audio signal with a remote control, or mm-hmm. with a mobile phone, or with a Captain Plus.
Okay, so that would be a major difference between what's out there now. You say it's on demand. Why don't you explain that?
Yeah, it's on demand because the system is working only for one or two phases, so green, red for the pedestrian, and mm-hmm. then stop to speak.
Right.
So it means that no blind with no remote means no noise pollution. Sorry.
Okay.
So this is the green sound.
Oh, that's very musical.
Yeah. This tells you can cross the streets, and when it's red.
Okay.
Rouge piéton means red for pedestrian.
Okay. All right. We're here with Jim Denham, who normally works for Perkins School for the Blind. But in this case, we are talking to him about a new project that he's involved with, involving an accessible game for the iPhone and iPod. Jim, welcome to Blind Bargains.
Hey, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Tap anywhere to continue.
So when you hear that sound, you know that maybe it's found the fertilizer.
Okay.
And the cool thing about this is...
Minia hears more music as you search closer to the fertilizer. Find the fertilizer and tap on it to have Mimia chopped down.
So like what it just said, Mimia hears more music. So as you get closer to the fertilizer, you hear more and more instruments. It doesn't change the volume because the volume is changed with voiceover. You know, voiceover ducks right. the volume sometimes and ducks things down. So they didn't want to do it with volume. They wanted to do it with more instruments.
Mimia hears more music as you...
So as I move my finger around the screen here, move around. So I hear more, a little more music there.
Right.
One more instrument. Now I hear that she's excited, so I double tap that. So now she ate the fertilizer.
Nice. We are here at CSUN 11 with Mick Curran and Jamie Tay, the President, Vice President, Software Developers for NV Access. Did I get that all good in one sentence?
Yep.
And we're here to talk about, of course, NV Access and NVDA. Welcome to Blind Bargains.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I was working for a company doing internet security stuff.
Sure.
So... I mean, I was working on it when I could, and there were periods where I committed lots of code, and then periods where I stopped, and then I'd go nuts for a few days, and then stop again.
Yeah.
And so, basically, it came to the point where Mick sort of said, "Look, you know, I really love this thing, but in order for it to really go somewhere, we need something else." And so he was invited to the Mozilla Accessibility
Summit? Yeah, I went to a Mozilla Accessibility Summit in Boston in 2007, and that was great to see a lot of the Mozilla folk again after CSUN. But they asked me there, you know, what could we do to really move NVDA forward? And so I said, look, I really need another full-time developer on the project. I'm happy to sort of do it in a sort of half voluntary and have small grants here and there, but I need someone full-time, someone else to look at the code, because when you're developing software, you know, you need more than one person so you can banter over things you know, have review and all that.
It doesn't just double the work.
So I SMS'd Jamie, and it was like 6 o'clock.
He has this habit of sending me text messages for really important things.
It was like when my children were born, or, I got married and things like that. Oh, by the way, I'm getting married.
You know? I'm like, that's nice.
Rather than ringing, but
so I got this text message at 6 a.m. So how would you like to quit your job and come and work full time for NVDA? And I'm kind of like,
where did this come from?
Where did this come from? This is pretty cool, but wow. So I was like, there's not really any question. I mean, I had to do a bit of internal soul searching and all that sort of stuff, but in
a few minutes, right,
security wise as well, because we, you know, it's like to jump into a big project where someone's offered you a bit large amount of money to do this, but the question is it sustainable?
It won't last for, you know, it might have lasted, and
sure,
because you were in a pretty good job at the time as well,
But in the end, I was like, I couldn't live with myself and pass this opportunity. I'm like, sorry, I'm just it's gonna happen, and funnily enough, you know, everyone around me that was close to me was like, do it, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity, do it. So I was like, okay, cool.
Coming up after the break, more from CSUN's past, some reminiscing from some of the people that have been to many of the CSUNs, and talking more about some of the pranks and kind of goofy things that have happened over the years. Plus, I mutilate karaoke. All that and more. Stay tuned.
HIMS wants you to meet EBOT, the first portable reading, writing, near, and distance video magnifier. The advanced and pro models also have optical character recognition. Use EBOT to read a smart board, papers on your desk, or any other printed materials. Connect EBOT through its built-in Wi-Fi network to your iPad or other tablet, your Mac or PC, or plug in any monitor you like. EBOT is lightweight and has ample battery life to get you through your busy day. Find out more about EBOT by calling HIMS at 888-520-4467 or by visiting us at www.hims-inc.com. HIMS, your needs are our solutions.
The first time I met Vinny Rappa, he was with Freedom Scientific, although I had kind of spoken to him in various ways at other companies before actually meeting him in person. Vinny had a really amazing influence on my entering the assistive technology industry. And this year, Vinny announced his retirement, and I'll be very sad to not see Vinny on the floor of some of these conventions. I've often joked that interviewing Vinny is kind of like the sun rising, and I just have to do it. And it feels really weird if I didn't get a chance to speak to Mr. Rappa. So, hopefully not for the final time, but here's my latest interview with Vinny Rappa while he was at Humanware from San Diego this year. Hey everyone, it's Joe here with my good friend and someone who got me into this industry. So if you have any issues, this is the guy to talk to, Vinny Rappa. Hi Vinny, how you doing?
How you doing, Joe? Great to see you again.
It's been a while, and 15 years to date us both a little. I met you at another company, and you gave me some sound advice. But I don't think you ever prepared me for CSUN and the onslaught of CSUN.
No, probably not. No, it's been interesting. Actually, I've been in this field for 34 years, and actually I started CSUN back when it was on the campus. And yes, we were in classrooms, and it was rather small, and then it started building up, and then they finally moved it over to LAX. So
you and Mark Stenzel were teenagers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. Then we were teenagers,
yeah,
yes.
That's what I thought. Okay, yeah, that makes
sense. So it's really changed quite a bit. Again, it's been very exciting. I do see the size of the conference getting a little smaller now as compared to before.
A little contraction.
Yeah, a little contraction. I think when it was located in L.A., they got more of an international contingency because of the location of LAX. Yeah. We're here in San Diego, even though San Diego is absolutely beautiful and I enjoy the weather and it's really very nice, I think it hinders some people to come here because you have to take another plane or another connection to get here.
Absolutely.
But you know, overall, I still think, you know, as far as the field of visual impairment, this is kind of the primo conference to go to here in the United States, especially for rehab and professionals. Whereas education, there might be another conference that's a little bit more popular with the educational aspect.
It does seem to be more about networking and social than the exhibit hall even now.
Exactly.
Because of the internet, somebody can get a demo or learn about a product through a podcast like ours. But if you want to touch a Braille display or see a video magnifier, this is still kind of one of the places to do that.
Very true. Very, very true.
Especially if you want to see things that are coming out of where they're being manufactured. I mean, the old days of InfoSil.
Yes.
You would see those prototype units or what was coming up. Or, oh, look, they're all using Sony cameras or image sensors now.
Exactly.
And we're standing next to a unit, but I remember round 9-inch blue screens. You remember round 9-inch blue screens.
Sure.
What do you think over time was the big innovator? What do you think moved video magnification from some guy who put a camera on his television and tried to sell it?
I think what I've seen in my years, I think the big motivator was to try to get a device that was one complete unit instead of having a big monitor on top of a platform or a camera on the side. So sure. I would say back when a telesensor was around and we introduced a device called Aladdin or Vantage, that really kind of changed it because Aladdin broke that $2,495 barrier, if my memory serves me right, and again, I could be quoting an incorrect price. Yeah. It was below $2,000, if my memory serves me right. And that kind of broke the barrier. I think what's happening now is there are so many companies that are hoping that with the baby boomers or whatever that the industry is going to be going up. But I think right now no one really has the silver bullet. So I see the industry being spread out among a lot more companies than back in the TSI days when there were only two or three.
Do you think that impending legislation, if it should go through, will spark a boom or even more of what you're talking about?
My gut tells me with the pending, legislation would be is I think then right now we've all been pretty fortunate that maybe a couple of large companies like Panasonic at one time tried to have a talking calculator.
Right.
That didn't work out too well. Xerox at one time came out with a Xerox device was called Outlook.
Yeah.
And again, that didn't work out too well because they're used to such large numbers. I think though with the legislation, I think that's going to open up the eyes of larger companies. And in my opinion, it could either be the demise of small companies. So I think it might be the demise or an opportunity for a company maybe to merge with a larger company to get their expertise. So I think it'll be interesting. I think with legislation, I think it could be good to the consumer because once again, hopefully this will be covered by the 80% or something like that.
Right.
So, but I see that changing. Where larger companies then will say, now this might be worth our while to get into this business.
It's weird to think about that, an arms race within video magnification. I mean, you mentioned the Aladdin. One of the things about that was its ease of use with the levers.
Yes.
There were levers on either side, and one would allow for magnification, the other would allow for adjusting color filtering.
Correct.
With the complexity that we have now, it's very difficult to position a product that has features but still has that user experience that's really going to appeal to probably the majority of people, older individuals, who aren't going to be intimidated by that. It's a really weird way to walk now.
It is an interesting time because we do have the technology, as you were mentioning, Joe, to be able to make a lot of advancements. But we have a beautiful device called Prodigy, but it has a touchpad on it. Some 80 and 85-year-old people just can't use the touchpad because they're not used to it.
Right.
Again, people down in their 60s and 70s have no problem with it. So you're absolutely correct. It's like, where's that fine line that you want to do? You want to have all the advancements and the capabilities, but your 80-year-old, especially if you're dealing with low vision,
right,
your 80 and 85-year-old person just really can't comprehend that at this point in time.
Well, it is cyclical, right? Yeah. So I had an Apollo laser with the external camera, and I put my Smith Corona under there and angle it, and here comes something like the 360.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're right back to external cameras again and things off board. And it's weird to think about that, how some old dogs do come back to hunt.
Very, very true. Very true.
Well, Vinny, I'm glad to be able to catch up with you before you change once again. You have a chameleon thing happening, and I'm glad to be able to catch you. But I hope I see you at convention.
I hope so too, Joe. I hope so too. Good luck to you too.
Absolutely. And Vinny and I are standing in front of the HumanWare booth, so definitely head on over to HumanWare.com. Learn about the new low vision things like the Prodigy, the new tablet, What's going on with that tablet, by the way?
What we're showing right now, which is really interesting, we have what's called a capture station. It's a stand that's on legs that fold down. And you can put the tablet on top of it, and now we have an HDMI cable that you can connect to any sort of monitor. Ooh. So realistically now you can have a very, very portable device that stores 100 pages of information. Uh-huh. But if you need a monitor, you can attach it to whatever size HDMI monitor you have, and you can see it in large print.
So who hooked that up to a projector on a 100-foot wall? Who went and got the glass beaded screen and did that? You know, because there's going to be some old individual that's going to do that, who's going to have that idea. Well, you know, I have a DLP projector and I have a very large wall.
Mm-hmm.
HDMI, that works out really well.
No, it does work out very nicely. Yes, it really does.
Until they look at the family photos and then go, oh my God, I got old.
Exactly. Very true.
That many pages of storage and battery operated, how long is it continuous?
It lasts four hours off a battery. Okay. It takes about 6 hours to charge it up.
Okay.
Again, the battery's replaceable. And again, what's really nice about the tablet or the Prodigy, everything is all software driven. So as we have updates, all the updates are free of charge.
Cool.
So we've changed a lot of different things. We've made some nice smooth speech on it, and that will be coming out on March 18th. So it's just really exciting. So once you have the unit, it still keeps on growing. But the good news is that the customer doesn't have to pay for all those advancements as long as it's software. Of course, if it's hardware, that's a different story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. With anything else in life, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Razor blade and razors.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. And one more question. Can you connect that to the computer and browse your directories or export, import?
At the present time, Joe, no.
Okay.
But remember, it is an Android device. What we want to do is, just like we talked about before.
Early in the life cycle.
About technology. Yes.
Yeah.
We don't want to make it so confusing.
Right.
Because there's only a limited amount of people that would understand its capability.
Correct. Yeah.
So, you know, later on down the road, maybe upload books, download books, things like that. What you're saying is a very good possibility. I don't, and I couldn't tell you anyway, what the roadmap would be on that. But it has a lot of potential to
do. And you guys have products like the Versa over time that changed like that as well. And actually, there was a simple version of that and then a more complicated version of that. So you actually have metrics to tell you what people are really looking for.
Correct. Very sure. Yep.
So one more time, humanware.com, and what's that phone number people can call to learn more information?
1-800-722-3393.
So I got you in on a special and got in a plug for Humanware in the process. Look at that, multitasking.
Look at that.
Vinny, appreciate it, man.
Good luck to you, pal. Great seeing you. Okay?
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are here at CSUN 2015. It's CSUN 30, the 30th anniversary, and talking to people who have been to a lot of CSUNs, a lot more than I have. One of those being Tony Shank, who is the president of Enabling Technologies. Tony, how many CSUNs have you been to?
I think it's been virtually all. I only missed one when my grandfather passed away about 25 years ago, but I've been to most of them.
See, the first one wasn't even, you know, we're here at San Diego now, right? The first one was at a university? Or?
It was on the campus of CSUN, yes, I believe so.
How big was that event?
Well, it was just getting started in those days, so it wasn't the conference that it grew into. It's grown into what I think is the largest in the country every year now. I mean, I think it's maybe even in the world.
And have you been with Enabling this entire time? Or?
Yes, I've been with Enabling 32 years now.
So the conference pretty much started right as you were getting started as a young company. And how have things changed or stayed the same over those times?
Oh, there's so many things that have changed. I mean, in the early days, you know, that was sort of your pioneer technologies. Everybody sort of was new to this, and I've seen the industry grow into a mature and established set of companies. But it was fun in the early days like that, because a lot of companies literally started in their garage and that sort of thing. And now, though, they're all pretty established.
Yeah, I've heard lots of crazy stories from the exhibit hall, and it's not always even been in an exhibit hall, right?
No, it hasn't. I remember when they set up the tents out in the parking lot that weren't really tents. That was still when the conference was held in Los Angeles, and there was a lot of controversy around that, but it never really ended up going that way, and I think shortly after that is when we moved it down here to San Diego, because it sort of outgrew the facilities there.
Yeah, you keep moving to bigger and bigger places because you have to to try to fit them in. You guys do any crazy gimmicks or really fun things in the exhibit hall? Do you remember any stories about some of the early days? Or?
Well, let's see. You never knew who would show up at the booth. You know, and sometimes the vendors would get a little crazy when it would slow down in the afternoons. That would be fun. But I don't remember anything specific, but we would cut the fool quite a bit sometimes.
Booths don't slow down much anymore.
That's true. Unfortunately, since we moved to San Diego particularly, it doesn't slow down much. You know, maybe at the very end of the day, but that's it. We're on our feet most of the day now.
What do you foresee for the future of technology over the next, 30 years or even 2 years? What's going to be the big thing?
Well, with the introduction of so many of the apps for the various tablet devices, that's been an amazing change to the industry, particularly in the areas of augmentative and adaptive communications technologies. But with low vision and all, as the camera technologies and all improve, it's just going to get smaller and smaller. And I suspect we're going to see a lot more things that were standalone devices move as apps onto these eye devices and things like that, tablets and that sort of technology.
Great. We look forward to seeing you for many years to come, and thank you for sharing some memories.
Thank you for allowing me to join you.
We're here at CSUN 15, and we're talking about CSUN 30, the 30th anniversary, and I'm with someone who's been to quite a few of these, Larry Skutkan, now with APH. Had a few different roles over the year. How many CSUNs have you been to, Larry?
You know, I'm trying to remember. Not quite all 30 of them, but pretty darn close to it. I'm going to guess about 25, maybe.
So in the early days, you came with MicroTalk? Or?
Yeah, I did. And I started coming for APH in 80. I started at APH in 85, so I think I might have come the year after that or possibly in 87. So.
Is that when it was at the university at that point, or?
I didn't go to that one. I think the first one was at the university. The first one I went to was at the LAX Marriott.
Right, of course, it was in LA for many years, and then finally came to San Diego. How have things changed over time, or what hasn't changed, or what's the same? Or?
Well, I think the industry has gotten tremendously larger and more complex as the technology has gotten more complex. More complex from a technical standpoint, fortunately more simple from a user standpoint. The hall is much bigger than it was. I can't really make an accurate guess, but I'm just guessing like three or four times as many people now as there was in the earlier days. One thing in the earlier days too that I always thought was kind of fun was that it was a much more close-knit sort of community. I spent a lot of time hanging around with Fruchterman and Blazy, and when I was with MicroTalk, we would all throw these big parties. I'm talking about like kegs of beer out in the lobby on the last night of the conference, and bathtubs full of beer. And I'll never forget one morning I go up to the Starbucks there in the lobby after that Friday night, and the woman working there is, "You blind people sure know how to drink some beer." But we don't really see those kind of real throw-out parties anymore.
Yeah, they're in some of the suites and things are in there, but, you know, things have definitely changed a little bit. And then the products, too, there was a lot of, like you said, really small companies back then. You know, Blazy was just getting started, and you, of course, and Ray's Dot and some others, and Computer Aids. And...
That's right. Computer Aids was there back in the beginning. I think this industry is still this way, but even back then it was more, it's a friendly competition. It's not cutthroat like you see out in the general industry. Everybody knows each other. They help each other out. And it still is that way. It's just that now you can't possibly know everybody in it. But back in those early days, you really did. You knew on pretty much all the players on a fairly personal basis.
Do you remember any, do you guys do any crazy exhibit hall giveaways or stunts or anything like that? Or?
To tell you the truth, I can't recall any. I mean, APH really, our swag is usually pretty pretty subtle. You know, a tape measure, those kind of things, pill bottle, pill organizer. Yeah, you know, good stuff if you need them, but nothing. Nothing that, I do remember one that drove everybody crazy, and that was, you probably remember this, JJ, when Blazy was giving out the clickers.
Yes.
Oh, my word. I think I might still have one of those at home somewhere.
This was back in the 90s. Yeah, they brought them to a few different conferences.
And so people were clicking everywhere.
Yeah, they started a trend of noisemaker giveaways.
Yeah.
I remember a couple, I think there was a couple squeaky toys here and there and some other things that...
You know, it's interesting, too. This last time I went to get my guide dog, they've started a new thing called clicker training, and that's one of the tools they use now.
Wow.
So the whole idea is let the dog know as quick as you can to make it clear to him, and that's what you do with the clicker, and then you reward them with the a little nibble of the food or whatever when they do the right behavior. So it's a much more targeted thing. So as soon as you see them do the behavior you want, click. And when I got that clicker, it really brought
right.
back those.
Well, shoot. Well now the guide dog schools are going to hear that. Of course, they're going to bring back the clicker. It's going to happen again.
I think they're still giving it out. I think what's interesting though is if they do it now, if everybody in here had a clicker, these dogs would be going crazy. What did I do right? I'll do it again.
Who do I listen to? As far as innovative technologies. You've done a lot of sessions over the years. Any that really stand out that you remember? I know there used to be like the dueling screen readers and things like that. But
you know, and this year, weren't they going to do a dueling mobile
yes,
devices?
Yes, they've been doing a dueling mobile on Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, I honestly have never been a big fan of the dueling things. It's a great show, but there's no way you can really get an accurate picture of what two things do in 1 hour. So,
right.
I mean, it's good entertainment. That's
sure.
about it.
Yeah, absolutely. CSUN, is he going to come to CSUN 60?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope I'm still around.
It's interesting. I mean, there's quite a few people that have been around. In some of the companies that we mentioned, I mean, some of those people are still here in other roles. And
absolutely.
And been cruising around.
And you know, once you get into this industry, it's hard to get out because it's so fascinating. There's always new developments going on. I would have thought, just from the way my life has gone earlier, that you'd kind of get bored with this stuff after a while and try to find something new. But that's not the case at all. It's always a new challenge.
What do you see over the next 30 years as far as, I know it's hard to predict that far ahead, but what are we going to be talking about in 5, 10 years?
You know what I keep going back to? Well, let me start with the simple things. So I think one of these days screen readers are going to recognize when you're, well, first of all, we all know everything's going cloud-based and HTML5. Yep. I think what we're going to see, though, is screen readers being a little smarter about you going to a page and putting your reading cursor, if you will, where you want to be, or even clicking the first link or whatever you, if you go to this page 20 times and you do the same thing over and over again, let it automate that a little bit, So that's simple. That could be done today. A thing that's a little more complicated that could be done really in the short term, too, is I think you and I have talked about this before. It's so frustrating to me to watch a sighted person do a search, click on something, and they have the information they want within a second. They just glance right at the screen. We need that for our screen readers, too. And it's not quite as simple because, there's a lot of things going on there with the ability to focus in on that relevant information. So I think we'll see that, though, especially, now that we've got open source screen readers and people can sort of make their own contributions to them. I think a little further out, though, that one of the most fascinating topics to me, besides what we're already seeing, facial recognition, but this idea of the scanning and reproduction of 3D objects interactively.
Right.
So you know well that we've already got the ability to scan and reproduce something in 3D, but it takes hours to do it. Imagine if that time was down to a second, and imagine if it wasn't a physical object that you had to print out, but you would have a representation that was dynamic, that you would, you know, it could be something that was small enough to, you know, you'd hold your cane in your right hand and this would be in your left, and you could sort of look at the sidewalk ahead of you as you walked along, or, you know, where the entrances were to various parts of the building.
It would adapt based on
Or look at the stars, yeah, or the edge of a razor blade, or, you know, anything like that. So
things that you normally can't see.
And you know, I was talking about this in my session yesterday. You know, I think there's probably a little room for some abuse and maybe some uncomfortableness, because now you get, you know, your teenage blind guys being able to check out women's bottoms like other teenage boys do.
Wow.
But, you know, that we have to really think, is that... You know, there's some social implications there. And, you know, I mean, on one hand, you can say, well, what's wrong with that? Because you're not really touching the person.
Right.
But it kind of gives you the creeps anyway. Yeah. You know?
Something to think about for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, but thank you so much, Larry, for sharing some of your comments and cool stories on CSUN 30.
Sure, my pleasure, JJ.
Hey, everyone. Interviews from CSUN 30 and talking about 30 with two good friends of mine here at the Dolphin Access booth. Gareth Collins. Hello, Gareth.
Hi.
And some guy I've never met before, Jeff Baser. Hi, jeez, stranger.
Who's that? Who's that?
I don't know that guy at all.
Good to see you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So let's just talk about it here. The carpet is still looking like it's the same, and it looks like there's fewer people here. But when was your first CSUN? Jay?
Mine?
Yeah.
Mine was in 2001, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I've been, that was back, of course, with another company. But we had a lot of fun at CSUN then, and we still do. It was different when it was in Los Angeles, for sure. You know,
oh, yeah.
It was, I mean... We'd have lines of people sometimes here at the booth waiting to speak with us. And that still happens once in a while. But, you know, I think there's good things and bad about moving down here where we are now.
Agreed. And celebrities lined up to see Gareth. I know that for sure. when they were in Los Angeles. Actually, no, Gareth and I used to actually exchange media back then. And that was a good way for us to actually catch up on different shows that you and I watch.
That's right. I think my first CSUN was about 96-97. I've always worked for Dolphin, where Jeff had worked for the F Word company.
Correct, right?
That's right. There you go.
Before in the past. And yeah, it doesn't seem to be as busy here as it was in the kind of
heyday.
The heyday, the late 90s, the turn of the millennium. In LAX, it does get busy every now and a while, but sometimes, like, it used to be like 7 or 8 deep at the booth at CSUN, and it seems to have shrunk, I think, the number of exhibitors, because if you remember, at the old CSUN, you'd have it in like 2 hotels, and...
Sometimes 3, because it would be at the Renaissance and that other one in LA.
And also there was like about 2 different ballrooms, wasn't it? And then they had the side rooms as well.
Yeah, those little alcoves.
Yeah, so I think it has kind of shrunk since it's moved here. But obviously San Diego is a nicer location than
Yeah, that's the thing that we always say about it. Once you get here, you are thankful they moved, because it's so nice to walk around here. And of course the weather's absolutely beautiful and there's lots to do around. It was a little tougher to do that there in Los Angeles, where it was. It was convenient to get there, less expensive to get there. But San Diego, it is tough to beat, you know, compared to anything.
So cookie jars and inflatable sharks that have flown around. But what's one of your biggest memories at a booth or an exhibit that you remember, Jeff?
Well, you hit two of the biggest there. I'll tell you, because we used to lob those things back and forth between
those rubber sharks manufacturers. Landed everywhere.
They really did,
yes.
And you know they really. I mean, they've made quite a presence at these shows. You know, we have a lot of people at Dolphin who love the balloons. We yeah. have on the top of our booth balloons that you can see all over the exhibit hall. Yep. And every time at the end, we've got kids coming up or mothers of children who right. really want to give their kids something special. They come in and get our balloons. And that's, you know, that's kind of a touching moment, actually.
Yeah. And I think there's a rumor this year that Eric Damery has resurrected his little flying machine. I think it was a flying shark.
It was a flying shark.
And that got damaged at ATIA.
Yeah, from floating around a dolphin in a circle, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
I do remember this.
So that got kind of broken, but I think he's fixed it. So he might be back for some revenge.
Do you remember any memorable booths or exhibits, Gary?
I remember having a friendly wrestle with the magic rabbit. I can't remember if it's Matt Atta or somebody like that who was inside the costume. Remember Magic, they used to have like a costume, a rabbit costume.
Uh-huh.
So, and there was another time where Eric tried, I think it was Eric or it could have been Charlie Madsen, tried to attach a shark balloon to the back of my belt on my pants, so that it kind of
free went, advertising, free
advertising. So those kind of little jokes.
See all the things we have time to do in between when we're talking to folks like you, Joe, and all the important folks who come to see us. We have so much fun to.
And that's why they should go by yourdolphin.com. See, I'm going to get that in here, even though this is a retrospective of 30.
That's exactly right. We would love everybody to come to yourdolphin.com because we have a lot to talk about and show.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you guys taking some moments off the floor here to talk about 30 years of CSUN, and be sure to stay with us as we have more going around. And if you get some chance, definitely go by and check out yourdolphin.com.
You're the best, Joe.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, there's a little inside baseball for you, right from the guys themselves, both Gareth and my good friend Jeff Baser, telling us some tales of woe from the show floor. You might have remembered from an earlier barbecue, BBQ, that we had mentioned that Humanware had placed their banner in such a way that it reflected off the topazes from Freedom Scientific screens at their debut back in Los Angeles. And it was really funny because when you would go to read the video magnifier, you would see a reflection of the Humanware logo in those screens. A lot of companies like to, well, do things to one another on the show floor. Sometimes those stories are legendary and they're really funny to hear. And some can never be broadcast, unfortunately. I've heard one or two of those. JJ, have you ever heard a story or two that kind of was like, wow, really? That happened? Must have been a slow day in the booth.
You know, this is, I guess, is people just try to kill time a lot. And especially when you're at these conferences for like 4 or 5 days in a row, you just start to. I remember actually the one that I was involved with over at the ACB convention when I was exhibiting in Reno. I was across, AT Guys was across from the accessible Dart people. And next thing I know, there's no customers coming through. They decide, like, hey, we decided to start throwing darts across the aisle at the dartboard, and I am terrible. They said they would give me a half off a dartboard if I actually hit the thing. They obviously knew me well enough that I did not, in three tries, manage to win that. Yes, we did watch out for customers, but that was a bit of fun at the conference.
You know, covering the show and standing in a booth, I've done both, and it is really a different thing to be on the other side of it, asking the questions as opposed to answering the questions. And both are very interesting in that you get to meet all sorts of fascinating people. You also get to see some crazy demonstrations. There are technologies that I've seen over the years that didn't come to fruition. You see a lot of concepts pitched at CSUN.
Yeah.
And some things just never pan out. I remember seeing two or three video magnifiers that just fell on their faces, and some companies who tried over the years to get a good footing out their Magnesight, Clarity, VTI in the low vision game. And unfortunately, a lot of those companies are no longer with us because they would have a showing at these conferences that would just make or break them for the year. And it was always harder to report on those either on my blog or in various other avenues.
because I knew when you would do it, it would be like, oh man, I really don't know how this is going to go. This is really, really...
Honest Vision's $15,000 Braille computer from last year.
Yeah.
I remember that was one that, it's like, yeah, no way, it's only $15,000.
And US, you said that with dollars? A straight face. Okay.
Right. So, you know, a lot of interesting things at the CSUN conferences, and we've had a lot of opportunities over the years to check out some of the technologies, and we definitely thank you all for listening to this special recap of some of the things at CSUN. Thank you so much,
Joe. But
we're not done. No, we are not done. Well, you know, sometimes when we do the shows and when I, you know, bring out that recorder, some harebrained ideas come up that seem like they're really good on the surface until they're actually recorded.
And then they're trapped in Amber MP3.
One of them happened my very first CSUN that I went to in 2010 in San Diego. The Sika booth, they have a nice Braille displays and things like that. They were demoing Braille karaoke, which is a concept I really wish would go further. Although I might not be the best person to be doing the singing of the Braille karaoke, but they did have it set up. And of course, with Stevie Wonder, you know, just to be all cliche. Well, just listen for yourself, and you can let us know how you think that went. Thank you all for listening.
I'm going to try to do karaoke with the Sika here. This will be interesting and scary at the same time. It's a Braille display, and I'm waiting for the lyrics to pop up. Here we go. Where's the lyric? Okay.
We mustn't get it.
No New Year's Day to celebrate. No chocolate-covered candy hearts to give away. Oh, I see. That's the extra layer. No first of spring. No song to sing. I can't sing. In fact, it's just another ordinary day. No April rain. No flowers bloom. No wedding Saturday within the month of June. But what it is something true.
So the PC is connected to the karaoke machine.
Made up of these young words that I must say to you. I just called
everybody
say
or not
I love you. I just called to say how much I care.
Don't worry, I'm not doing the whole song.
I just called to say I love you. I need it from the bottom of my heart.
Alright, that's plenty.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2015.